The panel discussed local and national news media coverage of the chemical spill that left 300,000 West Virginians without water. It not only brought together working journalists in broadcast and print media, but also a blogger and a documentary photographer who covered the story for the Guardian newspaper. Many panelists admitted learning about the crisis by following Twitter feeds. April Call with the television station WOWK in Charleston says the situation was a game changer in her newsroom.
We were exchanging a lot of information with our contacts, the governor's office, health departments, other water companies. And so it really did start an online conversation through social media, probably Twitter in terms of sourcing, but for us, Facebook became a real way to disseminate information to viewers, because no matter where they were, what time of the day it was, they could get that information. And we started to really see tremendous interaction between our viewers on Facebook and information, photos, tips, and then that would give us the nugget of information that we could then use to take to our contacts at various agencies.
Another panelist, Roger May, is a documentary photographer originally from Mingo County. He covered the story for the publication The Guardian. May used Instagram to emphasize the connection between two aspects of the story.
I made a picture of the Capitol, and then I thought, well, Freedom Ministries, let me see the proximity of Freedom Ministries from here. And so I mapped it out, and 3 miles away from the Capitol. And for me, that was a lead into using those two locations as a visual thread to connect a story to tell people on the other side of the world, this isn't just some holler in southern West Virginia or anywhere else. This is 3 miles from the state capitol.
And while Twitter and Facebook were also used to gather information, a lot of the information gathering came from good old-fashioned boots-on-the-ground journalism practices. This includes knocking on doors to get that info. David Gutman with the Charleston Gazette recounts his experience.
It certainly was a challenge sometimes getting people to respond to you. I think in that first opening day and a half or so, what I was most frustrated about was that Freedom Industries was this company that spilled the chemical, and they were totally silent. I remember that Thursday night, I was just so mad. I couldn't sleep, and I woke up at like 5 o'clock, and I had all the previous evening, I'd been calling the president of Freedom Industries home number, and no answer. And I drove out to his house and sat in the car. I'm like, you can't knock on somebody's door at 5 o'clock. What are you doing? So I sat in the car and listened to ESPN radio for like an hour and a half until it was 7 o'clock. I'm like, okay, now I guess now you can. He wasn't there, so that was all for naught. But I was still mad, and so then I drove down to Freedom Industries and knocked on the front door, and there was a secretary there, and I said, hey, is there anyone to talk? And she said no, and I just kind of started wandering around the facility, and I took some pictures and tweeted them.
While the journalists agreed there were benefits to using social media, there were also challenges. Dave Boucher works for the Charleston Daily Mail.
There's always a temptation, at least for me, and I think other people too. You have this information, it seems like a good nugget that you should get it out there as soon as possible. But, and even, you know, from the state, I know we've received conflicting information numerous times from the state, and you put out, for example, that the site hadn't been inspected since 1991, and that was picked up by everybody, and everybody reported it a ton of times. And then we find out a week later that there have been all sorts of inspectors at the site for 20 years, and it was just the DEP took a little longer to find the information. And while, you know, obviously you can't control all the information you receive, I think social media allows us to get that information out much faster and on a wider scale. And regardless of whether or not you did something wrong or somebody else did something wrong, it can make for errors, you know, going out on to many more people.
One of the most interesting points raised during the conversation came from Eric Wagner, who is a professor at West Virginia Wesleyan College. He blogged during the event, and one of his posts, an impassioned rant entitled, "To Hell With You," made waves in the blogosphere. Wagner joked to the audience that he's not a journalist. In fact, he says he made most of his posts while wearing a bathrobe on his couch, but he still made a lot of noise and got noticed.
And I got emails, I mean, literally from all over the world. Within the first few days, I got emails from Denmark, India, Ireland. I found out the guy who draws Homer Simpson on The Simpsons linked to it on his Facebook page. And at that point, I was like I win the internet. I'm done. That's it. That's all, you know. But like people, and I got emails from chemical engineers and from folks, the director of the public policy program at Harvard. I mean, it was weird. Like people who had absolutely no reason to get in touch with me other than this piece.
One of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's own reporters, Ashton Morrow, was on the panel. When asked what lessons she learned from her experience, she points to the source, literally.
I guess what I took away from all of this is how important it is to know your sources. And I have always found, I haven't been doing this for long, but I have found that you need to know your sources in good times when there is nothing for them to tell you in order for them to tell you the things they need to tell you when things are bad.
The panel event was part of an ongoing series at WVU, The Future of Media Now, which looks at how national news stories are being covered. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.